This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. Now, things were looking rather stable at first for Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin and his newly formed Perikatan National Government following the shocking events of Lanka Sheraton last year. However, as months passed, tension started to build in the PN camp as the coalition primarily comprising of once bitter enemies, UMNO, PAS and Bersatu, started shooting arrows at each other. So how will things play out as we continue to build towards the next general elections? Will Perikatan Nasional remain intact or will the three go their separate ways? Joining me on the show today is James Chai, a political commentator and head of commercial and research at Invoke Solutions. And he's going to be sharing his insights on the topic. Welcome to the show, James. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me.
All right, James, as it stands, UMNO Bersatu PAS, alongside some East Malaysian-based parties, namely Sarawak's GPS, are all part of the Perikatan National Government and they have pledged their support to the Prime Minister, at least temporarily. But if you told anybody this 5 years ago, right, that this will be the coalition that forms the government of Malaysia, and most people would have called you crazy. After all, Bersatu is an UMNO splinter party specifically formed to take down UMNO and BN at GE14, and PAS and UMNO, you know, have been at each other's throats for decades. So what changed?
Now, a lot of the fluidity in politics, a lot of people would attribute it to Lanka Sheraton, because that was when a lot of the chaos started happening and a lot of allegiances were no longer as predictable as before. But I think that most of where the origin of this political fluidity started was actually from the three-corner fights that we happened in GE14. So what happened was that PAS have actually decided that they were to go into the election alone, and therefore it resulted in not only a split in the Malay votes throughout the country, but it also means that it has given rise to a situation where no party will have a hegemony over politics anymore. Mm. So what that actually indicates is that smaller parties like PAS or GPS or any other small party who have their desires to be part of power in the future, they would have to rely upon these methods to survive. Because if they are in a coalition, they always have to be second feeder. This is their only way to fulfill their notion of being a kingmaker. So what that has contributed was that if each party will no longer have more than 50 or 60 seats, that has really become an impetus for things like Lanka Sheraton, like what you've mentioned just now, to happen. Because the inability for some parties, like back then it was Mahathir, a lot of people from Bersatu, and some people from UMNO as well, they could not accept this new reality that politics will forever no longer be a big brother concept. Right. It will have to be based on compromises. And therefore, Lanka Sheraton was the accelerant to all of this. In order for them to restore their perceived notion of stability, they have to resort to a lot of extraordinary tactics. So if you could recall the leak audio by Muhyiddin stating his scheme of things audio that talks about how he could offer a ministership or like GLC chairmanship to people to support them was an extraordinary tactic in order to restore a normalcy, a sense of normalcy of stability that would not really happen again. Right. And from there on, you would see the split of PKR, the split of UMNO, the split of Bersatu, all actually occurring one by one. But it all starts from this a change of reality that parties could no longer be a big brother. It has to be based on compromises with parties that you're very, very unfamiliar with.
Now, speaking of compromise, there seems to be, therein lies the problem, right? Because even after the formation of Perikatan Nasional, many experts predicted that the coalition will not last long because of the specific reasons that we mentioned earlier. So now, safe to say, those predictions have come to fruition. How would you describe the relationship between UMNO, PAS and Bersatu right now? I mean, how did things start to devolve? Where does the heart of the conflict lie?
So the only reason why UMNO, PAS and Bersatu were able to work together to form a government of Perikatan Nasional was that for a very long time, they did not have a common enemy, and putting them all into opposition has given them the common enemy of Pakatan Harapan. And there's also an anxiety from UMNO, who has lost power for 22 months. Some Bersatu elements also felt that this was a better way to come back to power in a much bigger way rather than in Pakatan Harapan, where you only have to rely upon 10-20 MPs, right? So from there on, there was a certain element of how power has also changed friendship into enemies. So this patchwork of partnership between UMNO, PAS and Bersatu slowly start to shatter when UMNO felt like they could not tolerate being second feeder. So although it is better being in government rather than opposition, they don't like to be in government as a second partner to Bersatu.
That's absolutely right. In fact, UMNO themselves have openly admitted this. I mean, at last week after the UMNO General Assembly, Mat Hassan, Mohan Hassan, he came out and said that UMNO is a party that is used to being the CEO, in his words, of the country, or at the very least of their coalition. But now, suddenly everything is changed. They are playing second fiddle, third fiddle. They were in opposition for 22 months. And he said, naturally, there were going to be some unhappiness, some discrepancies, some, perhaps instabilities within the party itself.
Yeah, so this one, you're exactly right that there were those sense of, I wouldn't say betrayal, but a certain sense of unfairness that why is it that UMNO, who is one of the largest parties in government, has to be subservient to Bersatu, which actually consists of actually 10 plus former UMNO members. So they know, and everyone in politics know, that Bersatu's original members would only be around 10 plus MPs.
That's right.
If it's not for PKR's crossover and UMNO's crossover into Bersatu, that would not, they would not even be comparable in terms of size to UMNO. So not only at the leadership level, there's also a lot of grassroots grievances against Bersatu. So one of the most notable one that has came to the fore is where UMNO grassroots were complaining about how Bersatu was setting up divisions across the country, and they were stealing UMNO members because they were just too impatient to actually do it on their own. So little events like that on the ground contributed to those sentiments, and therefore Zahid took Ahmad Hassan in the UMNO General Assembly had to actually voice out these concerns to illustrate that as a whole, being second feeder and being treated unfairly in that manner was something that they could not deal with. So that is really the summary of what is most problematic about it. But if you ask me what the heart of the conflict is that there is really no real difference. Like this whole second feeder concept,
right,
has been there since Perikatan Nasional came to the fore. So after Muhyiddin has appointed his own ministers and how he sidelined a lot of senior UMNO party leaders, there were already grumbles like that that had continued throughout the year. And it's only getting worse now because for everyone, they know that election is coming. So it is okay for UMNO to sever any relationship with Bersatu, because when it comes to elections, the more practical concern is that there will be irreconcilable differences in terms of the seats that they will compete. So because they would be unwilling to tolerate giving Bersatu those seats, they realize that it's better to treat them as an opponent throughout the country. So there is a practical element that actually forced them to sever that relationship. There's also a softer element of a feeling like Bersatu were treating them unfairly, and therefore they are the rightful enemy. So you be able to pursue it as right. a just cause.
Okay, now let's break down the various likely permutations and see perhaps which could be the most likely option we see coming forward, and also which could be the best option for people on the Perikatan Nasional side of the camp heading into GE15. Now, James, how strong of a force do you think Perikatan Nasional would be if they actually manage to negotiate seats, Bersatu and PAS and UMNO together, they negotiate seats properly and head into GE15 as a united front? Will they successfully, and I quote, unite the Malays as they so often talk about?
I think the Malay unity concept is very interesting because it is one of those things whereby it has a significant ideological underpinning to it, which means that it makes a lot of sense that if you can achieve Malay unity among the parties that claim to represent the Malays and go on a one-to-one fight with whoever is on the opposition side, you would most likely triumph in a very big way. But the reason why the Malay unity concept is so interesting is because there is no likelihood of that actually happening in a country like Malaysia, right? So that's really where people who believe in a more progressive and moderate country actually could find some assurance, because we see through the evidence of how PAS, Bersatu and UMNO has tried to work together. It is no longer the case that they were bickering because of Pakatan Harapan. Most of the time, Pakatan Harapan do not even do anything to incite the kind of internal fighting of Perikatan Nasional. They do it themselves. And the reason for that is because the electoral logic in Malaysia does not allow that to happen when everyone is competing to be the largest party. In other words, we are really looking at a situation of UMNO going into the election solo, because they will not even go through the negotiation process with Bersatu, because they would never accept that they are a smaller party. Neither would Bersatu, actually. So this puts us into a very strange situation, because Malay unity is something that everyone wants to claim to champion. But in order for you to champion it successfully, you need to be a relatively big force in order for that to happen. In our country, that doesn't seem like it would happen. So it would force parties like UMNO to go solo. The only difference is whether under whose leadership would they go for. Either Zahid, Mahasan or Kuli. Most likely is going to be Zahid in my books. But I think the alternative scenario of Mat Hasan leading will also be a good thing for UMNO. But either one of these leaders to lead UMNO into the election will still comply with the anti-Bersatu, Perikatan Nasional logic, because that's what the grassroots members are very keen on pursuing.
James, I want to press that a little bit, because I think a counter to that argument perhaps is that, you know, UMNO, regardless of what you think about their ideologies, whether you agree, you disagree, one thing we cannot deny is for years and years until GE14, they proved to be a very strong unit, a very well-oiled machine. They get the orders from the top and then everyone stays in line and follows, and they are run very well in that sense. But right where we find ourselves right now, it's like you mentioned, there's so many factions in UMNO. So is there a possibility that any of these factions, possibly being Bersatu sympathizers perhaps, or they might want to work together with them?
No, because I think that either one of the leadership will have to go with what the majority of the party wants. And it was quite clear to us that what the majority of the party wants is to sever ties with Bersatu. Now, there are what we call the minister clusters currently, consisting of Anwar Musa most prominently, and some elements of like Ismail Sabri and some of the smaller, less well-known ministers who are from UMNO, who may actually prefer to work together with Bersatu. But the challenge of doing that is that how would you actually split the seats with Bersatu? Because in any situation of any leadership, they need to justify why are we only pursuing 40 to 50 seats across peninsula and giving about, like, let's say, the similar amount to Bersatu. That justification, under whether you are a sympathizer or you are against Bersatu, will not actually come transpire well with the grassroots. Because especially when in a lot of these seats that we're talking about, Bersatu and UMNO would actually treat the other person as an enemy. So they would be open to sabotages if they are forced to actually give way to Bersatu, or they will not cooperate to Bersatu's success. So under those situations, it's just far more palatable for you to go at this election alone. And what you have made very clear as well, which I totally agree, is that because UMNO's machinery is significantly more well-oiled than Bersatu's, they will not actually think that there will be seats where they are actually weaker than Bersatu, and therefore you should actually give it to Bersatu. So that is something that is very hard for any new leader that comes to the fore after an UMNO party election to actually pursue.
Well, on that note, we do need to go for a very quick break. I'm speaking with James Chai, political commentator, and we're discussing the UMNO Bersatu PAS friendship slash rivalry that has been dominating the headlines of our political news cycle over the past few months. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is political commentator James Chai, and we're discussing the UMNO Bersatu PAS friendship and rivalry that has been going on for the lesser part of the last year or so. James, let's say UMNO ends up not being a part of Perikatan Nasional heading into GE15 like you suggested. They go in solo. Where does that leave Perikatan Nasional? Will the likes of PAS and Sarawak's GPS remain loyal to Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, or do you see them abandoning ship altogether and thinking of their own different strategies?
PAS and GPS under a coalition where it's just Bersatu, PAS and GPS, both of the parties will remain loyal to Bersatu before the election. But it is highly likely that they will abandon ship after the election. The reason for this is because the good thing of becoming loyal to Bersatu before the election is that you would divide the seats very cleanly. When it comes to PAS, for example, Terengganu, Kelantan, Kedah, some of Perak would be given to PAS, and Bersatu would normally take the rest of Peninsula. That kind of arrangement is actually quite okay for PAS. They would take some scattered seats throughout the rest of the states, but they're quite satisfied with taking the northern region. And when it comes to GPS, nobody would be contesting around the eastern part of Malaysia from Bersatu. They would try a couple of seats. Muhyiddin may have ambitions there, but they have already shown a sense of a subservience or also a submission towards GPS. So GPS and PAS would actually be very happy to go with a party where they are very willing to give them a huge amount of seats. Now, what is the alternative for PAS and GPS? They would either have to go through the rounds of being with UMNO again, which actually would not end up with giving them a lot of seats, because UMNO, in the spirit of wanting to return to the center four of politics, would actually even think that in the northern regions where PAS is stronger, that UMNO has a chance of winning those seats as well.
Right.
And chances are they actually would give a really good fight. And when it comes to GPS, however, they would also think that UMNO would have ambitions around Eastern Malaysia, definitely more than Bersatu. So under both situations, you're really talking about how this is the best coalition formation that they could have, because the alternative of being with UMNO or doing it on their own is actually far riskier.
Would the partnership of Bersatu PAS GPS be a strong coalition in the sense that would they be one of the main players once the results are out and the numbers are tallied? Do you think they would be one of the main players that other smaller parties go to team up with and try to form the government? Or would they be sort of a wild card where they have not enough to dominate the scene, but they have enough to choose which coalition will be the winner?
Yes, I think the latter is probably true. Mm. So you are looking at a situation whereby PAS's a lifelong dream of being a kingmaker, and which is really playing the role of like a Western version of GPS, which is like they would just follow whoever wins.
Right.
So we're really talking about a coalition of PAS, GPS and Bersatu as being a very loose coalition. I would even think that they would not pursue a common logo or common flag throughout their election. It is more likely that they think that their individual parties' logo or symbol would actually have a greater strength in the areas that they want to fight. So Bersatu would actually know this, but they would just hope that in other parts of Peninsula, if they can even snag close to 30 and 40 seats, so they would have some level of bargaining power.
Now, James, we also know that despite being political rivals for so long, PAS and UMNO have decided, this was post G14, to form a pact and call themselves Muafakat National. But recently, even that seems to be rather up in the air. Like you said, the situation, especially over the past year, has been incredibly fluid. With that in mind, do you see Muafakat National heading into GE15 as one unit? And if they do, how strong of a pack will that be in relation to Perikatan Nasional as well as the opposition, Pakatan Harapan?
I think from the UMNO General Assembly, what was already decided by Zahid was that they will not work with many different parties and they'll go for it solo, right? But I think the question of PAS was actually left relatively unanswered, because there were many members who have spoken on that day, or what they call debated the motion, actually thought that in a three-cornered fight in certain states, like Selangor, Perak, for example, is actually bad. In other words, they would rather actually team up between UMNO and PAS so that they would actually confirm their victory rather than Pakatan Harapan's victory. This is most evident in Selangor, whereby I think it's UMNO's Selangor head, No Omar, who is extremely concerned with Selangor continue to be a Pakatan Harapan state. And in the past, I don't know if you recall, Najib was also tasked to actually win back Selangor.
That's right.
So it's always like a crown jewel for UMNO, but they will never fail to win it. And this is where it gets very complicated, because at a top-down approach, it is generally agreed that UMNO will go alone. But will there be certain situations on a more local, more state-based level that UMNO is willing to work with PAS, either on an informal electoral pact or something of that nature, to prevent a third party, which is Pakatan Harapan, from winning? My guess is that it is less likely. So those kind of arrangements even would not really be that prominent, because like what I've mentioned just now, UMNO is at the cusp of returning to politics. There will be a certain element of imagined strength that they need to show. In other words, if you still show evidence that you're not confident of winning on your own, then the entire narrative of coming back to the fore becomes less persuasive. It's just something that would not work well as a political rhetoric inside UMNO as a political party.
Now, Anwar and PKR is perhaps the wild card in all of this. Pakatan Harapan, even PKR, in separately, they have released statements and held press conferences to try and sort of clear some of the confusion. But one thing we do know is that Anwar has said so himself multiple times that he is open to working with UMNO. First things first, how likely is PKR and UMNO to team up realistically? And do you see an instance where some members of UMNO perhaps, they stick to whatever their party is when it comes to seat negotiations and all that, but post-elections, perhaps a few members of UMNO or some fraction or the progressive caucus of UMNO, for example, decide, you know what, I'm going to say I pledge my support to Anwar Ibrahim as the Prime Minister candidate. Do you see any of these circumstances possibly happening?
I think UMNO and PKR, they will not work together before the election, but I'm starting to see more and more that they are more likely to work together after the election. The simple truth is that when it comes to three-cornered fight, UMNO will likely emerge as one of the largest blocks, but at the same time, the other largest block is probably PKR. So this is the nature of what politics is in Malaysia, because the mixed urban seats is probably going to be the main decider across peninsula. And PKR would actually have a huge advantage traditionally in all of these seats. So what that actually means is that it is very likely after the election that the vast majority of UMNO MPs would be willing to work with PKR. But whether or not this actually means that they, whether that would mean they would translate that support of Anwar becoming Prime Minister candidate would depend on who has the most number of seats. So either it is PKR or UMNO. Because both of these parties, if you realise, they have been victims of being large parties, but they did not take Prime Ministership. So under Pakatan Harapan, PKR was the largest party, but Bersatu Mahathir became Prime Minister. Under Perikatan Nasional, UMNO, a relatively large party, mm-hmm. But Muhyiddin became the Prime Minister instead. So both of them would actually be very particular on this rule that whoever has the largest number of seats would be Prime Minister after GE15. So what that means in terms of how they distribute cabinet positions is that probably Deputy Prime Ministership will go to the other party. So if UMNO becomes the largest party, someone from UMNO has to be Prime Minister, and then Anwar has to be like Deputy Prime Minister or something like that.
Right.
But I think that under those circumstances, UMNO is actually quite ready to work with PKR because they are not too great a liability to work with. It is true that Anwar and PKR represents this more progressive reformist bloc, which may alienate some people from UMNO. But I think by that time, UMNO voters themselves would have to reconcile with that situation, that working with Anwar while still being a large party in that post-election coalition is a good arrangement, which means that we don't compromise too much. We keep a hold on Anwar, but working with him is fine as long as he doesn't threaten the rights of the Malay.
I'm going to pitch something that may seem a little bit out of this world, but I think crazier things have happened in Malaysian politics over the past year. Is there an instance where we could see a three-way sort of a fight, three huge blocks fighting each other across the board, and these three huge blocks being first on one corner, we have Bersatu, PAS and GPS, Perikatan Nasional. On the other corner, we have UMNO and PKR, and on the third corner, we have Warisan, DAP, Muda, and Perjuang. And the reason I've come up with these permutations is, of course, just going off on certain news where, you know, when PKR was having talks with UMNO, especially Anwar Ibrahim, active talks, there were a lot of murmurs on the DAP side of camp, even from Amana, that, you know, they are not happy with this. They do not want to work with UMNO. And Recently, we heard Shafi Abdal, who is the head of Parti Warisan, he said that, you know, it's no more PH plus, now it's PH minus, because Warisan have sort of, you know, pulled out in a certain way. They'll still work together with Pakatan Harapan or the opposition, but they're not an official member, so to speak, anymore. So could we see this crazy three-cornered fight that I've just pitched, or did I just blabber nonsense out of my mouth?
I think whichever coalition that will solidify before the election will have to be broad-based enough. Mm. In other words, you need to always have one party who I call the anchor tenant in that coalition. And normally this one has to be a relatively experienced party that has some sort of command in the Malay majority seats. So we are really looking at situations whereby, although DAP and Amanah, for all of their grumbling about not working with UMNO and so on, I don't think that they can abandon PKR for now. In other words, I know that they have bought some sort of insurance in teasing out Shafi Abdal and probably shown that they are very willing to support Warisan's extension to Peninsula. And I think that that's a good sort of like second option for them. Let's say if they just got enough of Anwar and then they wanted to switch to Shafi Abdal. But I think all of them, DAP and Amanah, knows well enough that Warisan is just simply too small a party to make any dent at all to Peninsula politics. At the same time, Muda is not even registered, right? They're extremely young, not only in terms of age, but in terms of their presence across the country. It is very unlikely that without an anchor tenant, and DAP and Amanah knows that they are not anchor tenants in their coalition, they will have a very slim chance of actually winning at all. So if DAP would have to go without, let's say, PKR or UMNO, they would be deemed very easily cast as a demon in the entire election scheme. So what that means is that they will not even have a chance to retain the 40 plus seats that they have. Chances are they will lose almost half of it if they don't have like a Malay party to neutralize their image.
Right.
Right? So I think, however, the likely formation is not too far from what we have now. Mm-hmm. So I don't actually foresee, if election is within this year, that the coalitions will not have too dramatic a change. So the first coalition, I do agree, is probably PAS, GPS and Bersatu. Mm-hmm. So they would probably call themselves Perikatan Nasional or something. The second one is still Barisan Nasional. UMNO taking center stage with MCA, MIC as a neutralizing force to still give themselves some sort of fighting chance in non-Malay seats. And the third one would actually be Pakatan Harapan. Mm. So whatever that they have declared a few days ago, last week, will probably still be the case. They are working already on their manifesto. They have Anwar as a prime minister candidate. That is most likely not going to change that much. If they want to work with Warisan, Warisan would probably have to fall under the umbrella of Pakatan Harapan. If, let's say, Pejuang or Muda wants to also join, they're most likely going to join Pakatan Harapan. So that would be the three forces which all of them, if you realize, have an anchor tenant. They also have supporting acts that will make them a very broad-based coalition all across the country. So all three of them would be relatively strong in their respect. But as you can already tell at this point, the weakest one is actually Perikatan Nasional. Without any extension of a broad-based non-Malay support, for example, at the same time, their anchor tenant of being their anchor tenant is relatively less experienced, right?
With that in mind, let's say Bersatu and UMNO are not on the same team. Bersatu, you would assume, would want to defend all the seats that they won in previous elections, minus the likes of Tun Dr. Mahade, Syed Sade, Mazli Malik. Of course, both UMNO and PKR will be gunning for those exact seats too, especially since in GE14, Bersatu competed in the elections using PKR's flags. So do you think that Bersatu and PN will have enough popularity to defend their seats, or do you potentially see this to be a massacre where even the likes of Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin's seat in Pago could be in serious danger?
I am finding, I'm trying to find evidence on a daily basis on how Bersatu could actually survive in the next election. The reason for that is because Bersatu is currently made up of too many MPs who either have bad blood with other party, and therefore that really hinders them working beneficially with other parties. At the same time, they have bad blood with the voters. So even for their very strong leaders, relatively, like Azmin, Zuraida, and so on, they are not certain of even retaining their own seats. There was a certain period of time, I remember when Azmin and his gang of 10 joined Bersatu. He wanted to give some contribution to show that he is not just someone who is finding a shelter. Rather, he's a person who can bring significant contributions. So he wanted to bring this whole non-Malay wing to it, which until today has not really transpired into anything significant. He has also teased the concept of trying to go to Penang to try to win seats there, because I think he would imagine, coming from PKR, he would actually have a greater non-Malay pool than the people from Bersatu and formerly UMNO, for example. So what that actually means is that there were a lot of searches as to how they could actually survive. And I don't think Bersatu have actually sat down and decided which are the seats that are most likely to be won by them. So this puts them in a horrible quagmire that most likely no one's really willing to work with them before the election, because they wouldn't, and unless they are a weaker party, so no stronger party would want to work with them. After the election, most people would try to find other ways to form government rather than teaming up with Bersatu.
Okay, I think you have established that among the Malay-based parties, UMNO is going to be the main one. They are going to go in all guns blazing in the next general elections, and they are going to try and become the dominant party that they once were. Bersatu, on the other hand, they are probably going to be the ones scratching and clawing their ways, trying to, you know, retain whatever seats that they've already won. And maybe if they find a way or things do go their way, maybe they can win a little bit more. So where does that leave PAS? Do you see PAS having a prominent role in being part of the government, having, you know, ministers part of the government and all after GE15? Or would they sort of be this party that sort of represents states like Kelantan and Terengganu, but not so much, say, on a federal level?
Yeah, so PAS's position is actually quite advantageous to themselves because they may have that level of flexibility. Whether they would actually be part of government or not depends on depends drastically on the number of seats that they have. So if, let's say, they have around only 10 plus seats, it's very easy to cast them aside because they may not have enough. In other words, if they want to form government, they may need PAS and someone else in order to fulfill that gap. Whereas it may be better to just take a slightly bigger party to make up that numbers. Because when it comes to forming any government at all, you want as few partners as possible. That would actually make your position stronger. Let's say if UMNO is to form government at that time, they would probably have to team up with Pakatan. In Pakatan, there are already so many characters that they used to have a lot of issues with. Why would they want to bring in another partner unless they really don't have a choice, right? So under those circumstances, it really depends on how strong PAS is. Their performance in the northern region has always been deemed to be relatively separated from the rest of the peninsula. So if they win rather comfortably in those areas, then it still may be the case that they will still be in government. However, there's one small possibility that a lot of the fallen Bersatu members may actually contemplate joining PAS. They are probably former UMNO members, they will not join UMNO again, or they are former PKR members, they will probably not go back there again. That there is this one resting house that they may be accepted is actually PAS. So that is actually a possibility that has only recently come to the fore of some analysts who actually thought that that is one use of PAS, because they are very accepting of whoever as long as it would be beneficial to them in the long run. So that is really something that would have to take place after the elections. It's not clear at all because no one has indicated anything on this front. But that's past position. So they are relatively advantageous, but if they know how to capitalize it, they will be in a relatively good position.
All right. So things are still very fluid, a lot to, you know, keep our eyes on and sort of dive into as the weeks go by. On that note, James, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Hey, thanks, Dashrin, for having me.
That was James Chai, a political commentator and head of commercial and research at Invoke Solutions. And we were discussing the UMNO PAS Bersatu friendship / rivalry and how that may shape our political landscape moving forward. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my. You can even find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. You just have to search BFM Live and Learn. Once again, I'm Dashrin Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.